This is the beginning of class 5.
Sashi Bhagi Jashime Tosham Rira Vinshi Nyende Yampadi Sange Shindu Mithe Uwahi Dogo Sangye Chadam Sangye Chodama Chanchu Badu Dagni Kyasu Chi Dagi Chunyen Dibhe Sanangki Drola Penche Sangye Chupasho Sangye Chodam Sangye Chodama Jubadu dami kasuchi Dagi chumyen dipe sanangi Jola penche sangye jubasho Sangye chudam sangye chudama Jubadu dami Suchi Dahi Chunyen Kibbe Sanamki Yola Penche Sange Juhasho.
We talked about what karma was. We talked about the big divisions of karma. What makes a good karma? What makes a bad karma? What, by the way, what is makes a good karma according to Buddhism?
Good results.
Anything that brings you personally a good result, that, you know, that's the reason to be good, and the reason not to be bad. Yeah, I think that's very acceptable. And then we got into the different kinds of good karma and bad karma, and then we got into all the karmic results, and we had all these different kind of karmic results that come from one deed, mainly three different results that Tsongkhapa pointed out. And then I don't think the course would be complete if. They gotta hear this. This is fun. You ready? Okay. You all right? Need anything? Like batteries? Anything? No. Okay.
No.
All right. Just this is very important. This is, I mean, not that the other ones aren't, but one thing that always bothered me about karma was that I studied Abhidharma for, I don't know, 15 years. I studied all those other things. I didn't see anything that explained how the karma gets carried, you know, and how the karma stays in my mind, and where does it stay? And, you know, what kind of proof can you give me that I can accept that karma really operates like that? And then it was years later, it was maybe, I don't know, 15 years later, I was in a class, and it was about this book. It's called, say, Uma?
Uma.
Gomborapsa.
Gomborapsa.
Uma.
Uma.
Gomborapsa.
Gomborapsa.
Uma is what Professor Thurman named his daughter. No joke, because it means Majjhimika, middle way. And that's exactly why he named him that. He's in love with that subject, which is very proper. And so Uma means middle way. Gomba means the real intent of somebody. What did he really have in mind? There's not really one good word in English for that. I don't know. The real thought behind something, or the real reason why he said something. What he really had in mind. And an upsell means a total clarification. Total clarification. So this is the name of a book by Jet Tsongkhapa. I can't call him Tsongkhapa, okay? Impolite, I call him to, hey, you. By Jet Tsongkhapa. When was he born? Do you remember?
1387.
Yeah.
Book is about what?
This book is about the middle way. From the point of view of the highest school of Buddhism, what's that?
Majjhimika.
It's called Majjhimika. This is the highest of the four schools. Yeah. inside of Madhyamika, there's two parts, and this is the higher part called. So the first one thing I want to say tonight is we're out of the Abhidhamma school for tonight. Okay? Forget Abhidhamma. There's two parts, and this is the higher part called. So the first one thing I want to say tonight is we're out of the Abhidhamma school for tonight. Okay? Forget Abhidhamma. Alright? I'm speaking tonight from Mahayana viewpoint. I'm speaking from Madhyamika Prasangika viewpoint. Okay. Highest of the Madhyamika schools. Highest schools. Secret teachings are based on this also. Lamrim is based on this. You know, all of the highest teachings are based on Madhyamika Prasangika. The Madhyamika Prasangika has had a fight with the
Chittam.
Samsampa. Sam means what?
Mind.
Mind. Sam? Sampa is that stuff they eat into. No, not really. Sam means only. Just mind.
Mind only
school. Right? Mm. So this is the Tibetan name for the mind only school. And it's on the subject of where karma stays that you really find out why the mind only school is called the mind only school. It's very, very important. It's very sexy. People like the mind only school. They talk a lot about it. A lot of people have no idea what it means. So you're going to get a dose of mind only school tonight. Someday later we'll do real mind only. But it's in their discussion of how karma stays in your mind and how it works in your mind that you really see why they're called mind only. And I think what I want to say from the beginning, and I want everyone to hear it, is that their presentation of how karma works is basically accepted by everybody, by the higher schools, by Madhyamika Prasangika.
What do you mean basically?
Some details are not accepted, but most of what I'm going to say tonight, and I'll tell you what the details are that aren't the same. But what I'm going to say tonight is the way it is. It's the way karma really works according to even the highest schools. It's very, very important. And when I got to this subject, and when my teacher went through this subject, this was that famous occasion. It's the only occasion that I interrupted him blatantly. And I broke into the class and I said, this sounds great to me. I don't see anything wrong with this. You know, is this correct or not? And he said, it is correct. You know, we can accept it. Higher school accepts it. And that's all. That was the big occasion, you know. And that was like, then I could accept karma. You know, then I believed karma. Because it sounded so rational to me. Okay, so here we go. Very important class.
So, Michael, what you're saying is this is a Prasangika commentary on the mind-only explanation.
It's where Prasangika takes on the mind-only school on some points, and then they sort of purify their viewpoints. And Gombo Rinpoche is a huge work, very difficult, and you'll see from the reading. I mean, the guy who edited it got a headache, Vincent Montenegro, he went home. It's very deep. Tsongkhapa is a genius, a total genius. According to us, he was taking dictation from a Buddha. Okay, and you'll see if you read it. If you sit with a few sentences for a few days, you'll figure it out. You know, that's the right here. The name of his work translated is Illumination of the True Thought of the Middle Way. That's and it's in your reading.
That's the Uma Gompa.
Uma Gompa Rinpoche. Total illumination of the real intent of who? Ah, could be Chandrakirti. Probably Chandrakirti. Total illumination of the real intent of who? Ah, could be Chandrakirti. Probably Chandrakirti. Don't mix it up him with Dharmakirti. A lot of people do. Dharmakirti is the logician, Chandrakirti is the middle way philosopher. Right? Okay, anyway, what happens? You did a karma. Let's say you did a bad karma, okay? You killed somebody. Then, no, let's say you yelled at somebody, like I just did before class. apologize. When the result comes back to you, what supposedly happens? What supposedly happens to you?
You get yelled at.
You get yelled at, not once, but many times. Okay. But basically, someone is yelling at you. What is going on at that moment that someone is yelling at you? It's very important for understanding how karma ripens. Okay. There's three elements going on. Okay. This is the guy.
He's in class tonight.
The happy guy.
Oh, he's sad. He's mad. The first element is the mind, okay? His consciousness. Okay, I don't know what We don't say it's the mind. Does that look like a brain?
Yeah.
Okay, that's called Namshe. Mickey, not Mikey's, but Mickey's.
Mickey Namshe.
Okay. Mickey Namshe means consciousness of the eye. You're having consciousness of the eye right now while you look at me. You're aware of your eye. You're aware of the colors, you're aware of the shapes. That's consciousness of the eye. Okay, so while the person's yelling at him, let's say the person's got a red face. We're concentrating on the visual aspect. Okay? His Mickey number Shepa is functioning. He's having a, you know, you're at work, you're at the office, the guy stands up from his desk and says, why aren't those JCPenney pieces here yet? Which is what they said to me yesterday, you know, at 12:30 at night. You know? And they're looking at you and the face is red. And that's when I'm aware of his red face, my consciousness, my awareness of his red face is Mickey number Shepa. What's the faculty that allows me to see his red face?
The eye.
Remember the eye faculty, the eye power? Where is that?
Right behind the eye.
Yeah, according to Buddhism and according to Western medicine also, it's a patch of cells at the back of the eyeball that sense the colors and shapes and transmit it to the mind. Okay. So there's a thing called, I don't know, what do you want to... I'm not a very good artist. That's why I never drew anything up here.
Retinas.
But there's all these, there's this spot, right?
Receptors.
Receptors back at the back of the eye. Here's the eye, right? And there's the, what we call the Mickey Wamba. Pretty bad, huh?
This is going to be on the homework.
I'm going to see my drawing. Okay, Mickey Wamba. That's right there. What's the Mickey Wamba?
It's eye consciousness?
No, this is the eye faculty, the eye power, the eye, what you call the eye, what do they call it?
Cones and the rods.
The cones and the rods, yeah. The eye...
Perception.
Faculty. The physical, it's physical, it's matter, it's physical matter. It's the receptors. It's the nerves, it's the end of the nerves. You have them all over your skin for touch. You have them in the middle of your ear or somewhere for hearing. And then what's it looking at? This guy's red face, right? This is the boss. His face is all red. And he's yelling, okay? That's what we call the you. Excuse me?
Number two. You said there were three things?
Yeah, well, now we got three.
Oh.
You're looking at the red face. That's colors and shapes. They are sensed by your eye faculty. And based on that, a consciousness grows.
When you say a consciousness grows, do you mean the mind apprehends?
You're aware of his red face.
Is that the apprehension? The
yeah.
Mind apprehending?
It's the awareness of his red face. This is like the sense of it. The physical sensation of redness and shape. And then the mind is doing all this interpretation.
That's interpretation.
He's red, he doesn't like me. But don't forget, this is not really interpretation at this point. This is just an eye consciousness. Awareness of red.
Awareness.
You're aware of my red here.
It's not interpretation yet.
No. You could have, you know, theoretically, if your brain was not functioning, your eye could be transmitting, your eye power could be working, but your brain wasn't doing anything. You could say, it's actually true of the first instant of the instant of the instant of the, that perception. The eyeball has already sensed that color, but there's a time lag for it to inform the, it actually creates an eye consciousness. And then theoretically, the last moment of looking at his ugly face, this is still operating, but this has finished now. You're still aware of red, but this is already finished. The last moment of his red face has already passed down the pipeline. Okay, so that's what's going on. There's three things going on. Now, what do the mind-only schools... Now we're in the mind-only school. What does the mind-only school think? How does the karma ripen? How does this event take place? Okay. They say something very interesting. They say there's a thing down here. It's the first time I ever tried this. Okay, you're bad luck because you're in the first class. It gets refined. This is something. This is a big
sole of your shoe.
This is called kunshi. Say kunshi.
Kunshi.
baseball bat.
I'm about to explain it. It's a big worm. No. In Sanskrit, very famous. You hear people throw it around, you might as well know it. Okay, people love this word. Alaya Vijnana. Say Alaya.
Alaya
Vijnana.
Vijnana.
You know, you'll hear people in universities, they love this. Alaya, or she, Kun Shi, means basis consciousness. I translate it as foundation consciousness. You might hear it translated as storehouse consciousness. It means a foundation consciousness. And they say that all those karmic seeds are sitting in this consciousness. They are resting in this consciousness. And when the time comes, they produce Miki Namshi. Here's that little seed, okay? What's that seed? Kali, you know that word. Mental seed. In Tibetan.
Oh,
it's a cute word. People always remember it.
Yeah, one second.
It sounds like pierogi. No.
Bakchat.
Very faint. People love this word. I don't know why. It sticks in American people's minds. I don't know. It must sound like something.
Bakchak.
Bakchak. Okay? This little seed here, this little guy here, karmic seed. Seed of your karma. Bakchak is sitting in where?
In the Ayaya.
Sitting in the Laya Vijnana. Sitting in the foundation consciousness. And then it starts to grow. It starts to give its result. Okay. What happens? It creates a making namshi. It creates that awareness of the red color of my boss's face. That grows out of that base consciousness, that big pool, my personal consciousness pool. It suddenly generates it suddenly produces an awareness of a red face.
I didn't follow that. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, Michael, is that as separate and distinct from the raw awareness, the sight awareness, or does it go on top of it?
No, it is the raw awareness. It is creating. Yeah, this is a totally different consciousness. It's like a big pool of all your karmic seeds. It's in you. It's not connected to any of your other consciousnesses. It's not connected to your eye, ear, nose. It's totally separate. It's a totally different consciousness that you have. It's sitting in your mind, and it's the storehouse, it's the pool where all your karmic seeds are sitting. And when the time comes, they produce an eye consciousness. When you say eye consciousness, it's not like you're thinking, oh, I like this color, I don't like this color. It's just the awareness of the color. Yeah?
I have two questions. First of all, is bok chak and seed the same thing?
Mental seed. I'm using the translation mental seed for bok chak.
They don't
people call it propensity, people call it karmic energy, you know, whatever you want. Bakchat means this. I'll give you an example, very famous example in my mind. You know, I remember when I first met Rinpoche, he didn't have a green card. Somebody had messed up his papers. It took like 5 years to get his green card straight. We used to go out every day and watch for the yellow station wagon out the temple window, you know, the postman. And then when he came, we'd run outside and he'd say, not yet, you know. And then one day it came, and we were jumping up and down, and so now he can stay in the United States. And the next morning, we're out at the window again, you know, waiting for this yellow car. We have a bakchak for a yellow car. That's a common bakchak. This, we're talking now karmic bakchak. Well, it means a mental habit, a mental seed, a mental stain. The synonyms are given in your reading.
I'm not sure if I'm...
But it's not further along in the ripening process than the actual seed that's stored in the reservoir.
We're going to talk about when the seed gets planted, how it stays, and how it grows. I'm not up to that yet.
Bakchak is a synonym for seed.
Mental seed. Mental seed. It's not a word for a physical seed. Physical seeds are not called bakchak.
The other question I had was, if this bakchak ripens and becomes the eye consciousness of the red
state... Well, you can say
well,
become.
Or develops.
Produces an awareness of the redness of the face. Yeah.
That same seed, that same bhakta, does it produce the auditory awareness of the red face yellow?
Oh, is it the same bhakta?
Is it producing more than one consciousness?
Could. That's a long story. Yeah, it could. It could. That's a long story.
Because the eye consciousness doesn't hear.
Is Kunshi technically part of the mental consciousness?
We'll get into it. According to all Buddhist schools, there are six consciousnesses. which are what?
Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body,
and mind.
Consciousness of your thought. That's where you hear yourself thinking. Those are accepted by everybody. The mind-only school says there's two more. Only the mind-only school says there's two more.
Is that
and
accepted?
The big one is kunshi. Does Madhyamika Prasangika accept this kunshi? No, and we'll get into it later. But why do they? Why do you think they have to have a thing called kunshi? Why do you think they need a thing called kunshi? Why did the mind-only school come up with this thing called kunshi?
To have a home for the seeds.
You gotta have a place for the seeds to stay. And the Madhyamika Prasangika school says, look, your theory about having a place for the seeds to stay, everything else, that's fine. We accept everything you say. You don't have to have a separate consciousness called kunshi for it to stay in. I'll get to that later. Okay.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure I was following your jargon or your terminology to where the seed comes from. You know, you're talking about eye consciousness. When you say eye consciousness, are you referring to Mickey Wangpo or are you referring to something different?
This is I refer to it as the faculty or power of the eye. The physical matter which senses the redness. This is what I call eye consciousness. This is the brain part, the eye consciousness, the consciousness of what you see. I'm seeing something. It's even more basic than that. It's even more raw than that. It's just the awareness of the color. Even prior to the interpretation. It's mental.
So,
but it's the mental awareness of the color.
So if you didn't have if you wouldn't see it at all if you didn't have a seed? I mean, you
if
wouldn't
you
see your voice yelling at you?
We're getting there.
Okay.
So when you say that bakchak, the seed arises, you're saying it only arises in the eye consciousness, the Mickey Nantra.
This is a great question. No, like a good lesson is supposed to flow like that. Okay, he asked, is the bakchak creating anything else? Yes. It's creating the Mickey Wongo.
And the Yule?
Get there. I'm cranky tonight, okay? I warn you in advance. I'm sick. Okay. The bakchak, the kunshi, produces a mental event, and it looks like your eye. It looks like the faculty of your eye. It looks like you interpret it to be the physical faculty of your eye. It's an emanation of kunshi. It's kunshi producing this specter, this image, which you think is your eye. But it's not. It's all coming from kunshi. It's kunshi looking like a what?
Are you still talking about the guy yelling at you?
Yeah.
So this guy yelling at you is making your eye look like
The karma is. The karmic seed is producing consciousness.
Yeah.
Which looks like an eye.
The physical eyeball.
Yeah, like the cells back in the back of your eye. And you take it to be your eye, faculty. That's the thing that if I poke it out, you can't see anymore. And you're aware of your eye. I mean, you're aware that you're seeing, right?
So they say there's no such thing as an eye?
We're getting there.
Okay.
Michael, can you repeat that? You're saying that the karmic seed produces the consciousness that looks like the eye?
The karmic seed causes an instance of kunshi, which looks to you like your eye power, but which is actually just a part of consciousness.
All right. Is kunshi the collection of bakchaks, or now you're saying it produces the kunshi, or the kunshi produces?
It's both. It's the place where the bakchaks stay, and it's what starts to look to you like your eye.
So it's the place where the bakchaks stay.
Yeah.
And then when they become activated, it's the place where
it's
they
the
perform.
The thing that looks like the
where they mimic what would otherwise be a uninterfered with eye sensation.
But you're saying it all comes from the same bakchak.
Right. And that it's all consciousness. So they have to say there's no
eye consciousness.
No.
Oh.
Worse than that.
You will.
Yeah. They say there's no outer forms. They say there's no outer objects at all.
So
that are not mental.
Yeah. So what about the... are we alternating then between unobstructed Wang pose and Wang poses that are being actually mimicked by Bok Choks, or we're always having Bok Choks
and we
never get to
any Wang pose you ever have is a result of a Bok Chok. Any time you think you see something outside, it's just you seeing your own mind looking like that.
So our retinas really are just sitting here doing nothing all the
time.
There
is no physical retina.
You just drew it on the board.
It's all in your mind.
No, this is Kunshi looking like a retina.
No, I'm not talking about the would-be retinas. I'm talking about the actual retinas.
There is no such thing in this school. There is no such thing in this school. All cases of retinas are Kunshi looking to you like a retina because of your karma.
So we might not even exist as physical bodies then.
Thank you.
If you don't exist as outside physical forms, no, they would say that. That's why they're called Samsung.
So Mickey Wampo is the display of Bok Choks. Got nothing to do with an eye or anything.
Yes.
According to this school.
There's something there, which is mind. And it looks to you like Tom Kiley sitting there talking to you.
But when you say it's mind...
It's my own consciousness in the form of... It's something not out there. It's right here. You know? And I'm just, all the time, I'm just seeing this thing, right, stuck
it's
to my eye.
It's not right there.
It's not even there. It's
we think
to
it's
my
there.
Mind.
It's not an eye. We think it's an eye.
Yeah.
But, Michael, when you say mind, you mean eye consciousness, right?
Yeah. But it's the same for all the other consciousnesses.
Right.
Okay.
But so we're not going any deeper than eye consciousness.
Well, we're trying to pick an example which is concrete.
Yeah, it's great for Halloween evening.
I told you it's gonna be off course. But this is very, very profound. This is very close to what's actually happening. Doesn't it make sense that if bad karma creates some kind of suffering, that it's actually creating all the events of that suffering? It's creating the object that you see, it's creating your eye that sees it. And it's creating your consciousness of it. And didn't we just get through a whole course saying that mind has to produce mind?
So where's the basis in this picture?
What do you mean? The basis consciousness? The foundation?
No, the basis upon which, the empty basis upon which all of the attributes are laid.
That we'll get to that. You're not, that's my new person. We're talking right now for the first confusing 45 minutes, you're going to be in the mind-only school. And I'll confuse you more.
So what you're really talking about is how we perceive objects. You keep saying you perceive your eye, and that's confusing me. I don't understand.
Well, is there something about Janet Diamond that if I took this pen and stuck it in it, that the world would blank out for you? Yeah, that's your eye. It's what you call your eye. It's the doorway to all these colors and shapes. When you close your eyes, it doesn't work, and all you see is darkness. And, by extension, the very thing that you're seeing, me, for you, is just another part of your brain. You're just seeing another part of your brain, looking like Michael Roach. That explains why everybody has a different perception of me. That's why some people come to class and bored to death, and some people like it. I mean, that explains everything very well. That's mind-only school. And that's how karma grows. There is no outer thing.
That doesn't explain your own self-perception of yourself,
absolutely,
as opposed to
please.
Me perceiving
absolutely.
You.
No.
Because if it's mind only, then I can say you don't even exist.
This class. That's very interesting for me. Yeah, sure. That explains everything.
No, but I'm saying then I could say you don't even exist, except in my mind.
That's
but
true.
You feel
yeah,
like
well,
you exist. But
I,
you
I think
you
I exist,
exist
in my mind. I mean, I think I exist outside my mind, but they say that's a mistake. You don't exist outside
my mind. So there's no proving that you exist or I exist.
There's no proving that I exist for you. I don't know if I exist for you.
No, there's no proving that you exist. I know you exist for me.
I don't agree.
You see
me, so I exist. What are you talking about?
So you're back to relative and ultimate realities again. Of course you exist because...
You perceive me, and you're not crazy,
so
you're not drunk, you're not
relative,
insane, and you're not, you know, that's fine.
So this is all ultimate, then.
No, this is explaining how things exist relatively, actually. We'll get through it. Oh, so what is emptiness to the mind-only school? I don't want you to write it down, but for you, because your mind's on the point right now. Emptiness in this school is the lack of any separate seed for the object and the mind itself.
Say that again.
The perceiver and the perceived thing are empty of it, of being caused by any separate thing. And that's emptiness in one school. What they're trying to say is, look, the mind that sees the angry boss and the angry boss himself grow from the same mental seed.
In the mind only school.
In the mind only school. The same karmic seed in your mind is producing that boss's red face, it's producing the eye that sees that boss's red face, and it's producing your awareness of the boss's red face. Everything's your fault. Sorry. Okay. That karma ripening in your foundation consciousness is creating him. What does he exist of? It's just your mind.
But if four people say that he has a red face?
They all have the same... That's where we get into collective karma. Collective karma means, because we're all having this class together, we're all going to enjoy some event in the future if we have the right attitude like that. That's all. Sure, if people get together and do something together, and as the karmic result, they all experience the same thing together. Everybody in New York has the same karma to enjoy the same results. Someone who died last night, Carmen's father, he lost the ability to enjoy that result. Yeah. So that explains everything. It's quite nice.
Yeah. So would another way to say this be to say that the functioning of our mind imputes a label onto everything that exists, and nothing exists outside of the imputation?
That really is a little step higher. We didn't get to that yet. You can say impute in the sense that you think it's an outer object. John Stillwell, I swear to God, he looks like he's out there.
Yeah.
But it's really just my own mind, seeing my own mind, looking like John Stillwell. So if he's pleasant to me,
yeah,
it came from a virtuous bhakti.
So in this school, then, what is the raw material that the mind is seeing? It's seeing itself.
Mind.
What is it? What is mind that it's
consciousness. It's seeing consciousness.
Consciousness
seeing,
perceives consciousness.
It's seeing some kind of emanation of kunshi.
If there is no body and there is nothing, how can you connect body
to and how can there
say
be other beings? I mean,
say it again.
How can there be other beings? There can't be other beings.
Why not?
Because it only appears as if there's other beings to what appears to me to be an eye.
Well, you can
and
say
what
that
appears
we're
to
like
me to be my brain.
Spaghetti noodles that never touch each other, maybe.
Pardon?
That maybe that's true. Yeah, the Tom Kiley I see is not the Tom. Maybe, but there is a Tom Kiley experience in himself as Michael Roach. I don't know.
So would you say then that the mind is everything? I mean, see, this is what the inner outer is what's mixing me up, because the mind for me is in here.
Yeah. Yeah, they say no outer objects. They say outer objects don't exist.
So there's nothing outside of this
there's
little globe on top of my shoulders,
which is just the flowering of a karmic seed.
Projection.
It's not a projection. We didn't get to there yet.
No, but he's saying there's nothing.
Not even there's nothing with your body and with your speech. If there's no outer object.
An apparently outer object does an outer thing to another apparent outer object, and that's correct.
So you're saying there's nothing.
It's all in your mind.
None of you exist.
You're saying if there are outer objects.
That's me.
Wait. She raised her hand and she's very patient. Go ahead.
Thank you. Two things. One, I've asked two what I consider to be kind of high Buddhist teachers. Well, one is Rinpoche, and the other was a Chan master. Yeah. What influence do mind streams have? What connection do mind streams have on each other? And both of them said, they thought from it, they said, they can influence each other. And that's all they'd say on it. So that's about the next spaghetti noodles. And then the other is, if you say, I don't know if that's all for them. The other is, if you say the perceiver and the perceived object are both produced by the same seed, how would you link that grammatically to the definition of emptiness in the school?
I lost that. The perceiver and the perceived thing are empty of having any separate substance. That's why there's a lot of emptinesses. You gotta get it straight. It's not a crazy thing at all. I mean,
they're empty of what?
Logical.
The perceiver and the perceived.
Any separate substance. They are the same stuff. Looking
empty
like
of anything separate.
They are empty of any separate substance. You don't have to know that. It's not in your homework. Somebody asked me. It wasn't going to be part of the subject.
So if your mind is in the scope of existence, and my mind occupies this finite amount of space, then that means nothing exists outside of this finite amount of space.
Right.
But you don't know.
So why practice dharma? I mean, what beings are there to help?
How not to be a nihilist?
They didn't say beings don't exist. They did not say beings don't exist.
You just said that the yule, the mirror, the one, everything.
Did I say the yule didn't exist?
No.
you said it was a result of the bok chak.
I said it was Kunshi, because of bok chak's influence, right, appearing as a yule. And you want all those appearances to be happy. That's fine.
So you practice dharma to fool yourself into thinking that you're helping beings and everyone's happy.
I fool yourself.
That's what you just said.
I'm not fooling yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So you can produce seeds that make you believe that they're happy beings that are being transformed.
Yeah,
right.
That's exactly what you're going to do.
According to the school.
Because if you don't, and very close to the Madhyamika Pasadika, what's the alternative?
So all references to helping beings is really an illusion that...
Well, it's an illusion. It's only an illusion if you think that those beings are somehow separate from your consciousness.
They still exist, but they're just separate.
They have no existence outside of your consciousness. They absolutely exist. They're absolutely valid.
So in the context they
absolutely
of the
suffer.
Correlation between
you absolutely
the two people,
have to help
they have,
them.
Yeah, exactly.
But
exist,
I'm
saying because you have to share.
They don't exist the way you thought they did.
But you're saying they're findable or unfindable?
In this school, they're all findable.
They're findable?
In this school.
Outside there?
Not outside. No, not
okay, outside. That's what I meant, though. So they're out there, but they're unfindable out there.
Oh, no. Did you say out there?
Yeah.
You only said unfindable.
Well, you said there might
out
be
there,
other...
No.
There
out there,
are other beings out there.
No. Outside. No. No. Outside of your consciousness, no physical outside form. No.
I'm talking about beings.
Beings.
Beings is, beings 90% is their bodies, okay?
So how do they distinguish this from when somebody's dreaming?
That's an excellent question. And the Prasangika says the same thing to them. Well, then dreams would have the same reality as this. And they get into that. It's a big debate. It's a tremendous question.
Because that's what happens in
a
dream.
I even started to translate it, and it got to be like 3 o'clock, and I said, I cut it out. It's a big question. Yeah.
What's the most basic definition of how to identify or what is a mind stream?
We're going to talk about that very question. Tonight, we're going to talk about it. Okay? All right, so that's the basic process. Now, it's not crazy. If you think about it, I mean, it's very attractive. You could never get to Majjhimika, and probably this would be very effective. It's the other Mahayana school of Buddhism. It's not some crazy dudes, you know? This is the other big Mahayana branch of Buddhism is saying that's what is going on. The Prasangika viewpoint is more radical. The reality is more radical than that. But in the meantime, that explains events happening to you through karma. It has to. It has to be that way. Where did you think karma stayed? What's your alternative? Karma stays on Mars and comes back to Earth every 5 years or something? It stays in your mind stream. And then it emanates these things, and it emanates the perceiver of them, and you think you are suffering.
It's kind of literal-minded to assume it needs a space.
What's that?
It's kind of literal-minded to assume it takes up space and therefore needs space.
Did I say space?
No, but the kunshi is a place for it,
separate
right?
Place for it.
Well, we'll talk about it. Okay, so basically, you can't digest everything in one night. Tsongkhapa went into a retreat and for years. I mean, he was very confused about all these things. he's kidding. Okay. So if on your homework it said, welcome to the mind-only school, what two things does the mind-only school say is produced, you know, by a karmic seed? The first is that consciousness. Right here.
Okay, so mind.
What is the question again?
What two things are being produced by that karmic seed? The first thing is your awareness. John Stillwell's mind. What's the second thing being produced? John Stillwell's eyes. And by extension, what he sees. So you can divide it into two things. John Stillwell as the perceiver, as the mind that perceives, is being created by a karmic seed. And then Michael Roach and your vision of Michael Roach is being produced by the same seed. So two things are being... the seer and the thing that he sees, which includes the ability to see it, are being produced by that karmic, one karmic seed.
Why is Yule the angry man an extension and not a third thing?
Because that's the way they present it. And I'm not going to change it.
So your perception of yourself is also that?
Oh, absolutely. That's how you get the light. You plant all the right bok chaks in the kunshi,
And then you see yourself as
you
Buddha?
No more Helen Chrysler. I see an immortal deity, yeah, in paradise.
So just by reprogramming your perception, basically.
No.
No, just by taking part of it.
What's the only way to change things?
Doing good.
Your reaction to your perception.
Put some new bok choks in there. Yeah.
Your reaction to your perception.
Yeah. Put some new bok choks in there.
Online.
I repeat, and I will repeat until I die, until I see myself die. You can't change the. Once the bok chok is growing, forget it. It's too late. You know, take all these great masters and say, you know, oh, just have a good attitude while the guy's yelling at you. You know, forget it. It's unpleasant. You're having a good attitude about an unpleasant object. So what's the big deal? You know, it's an unpleasant thing. No kind of attitude change is going to make it pleasant. It's unpleasant to get yelled at, I swear to God. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, it's unpleasant. It's too late to change it. You must now let that bok chok. What happens to all seeds when they produce their results?
Disappear.
They die. They disappear. Acorns disappear when the trees come out. For God's sake, don't put a new bok chok in there by getting mad at him.
No, wait a minute. You have to put a new bok chok in there.
A good one.
Well,
good
one is going to produce the other, right? Or unless you go blank while you're looking
neutral
at the red boss, right?
Well, there will be there could be a neutral bok chok, right?
Well,
neutral.
I didn't say whether they were neutral or what. But they,
so we're saying, let's create a good bok chok.
Michael, is self-awareness part of mental awareness?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Different schools have different degrees.
But it's always coupled with.
Is there a thing called Rang Rig? Which is.
Yeah.
There's a word for it.
Self-awareness.
There's a real word for it. Apperception. Apperception. Yeah, no. In the higher schools, it doesn't exist. The ability of the mind to see itself as it's seeing is not accepted by the higher schools. But it is accepted by the mind-only schools.
In the mind-only school, what is the scope of the mind and the space it occupies? And that's, you know, like the mind equivalent to the entire universe. What is their take on what the mind
is? If you think of it that way, I mean, you just visualized it correctly. Because really, when you look up and see the stars in the sky, that's, you're looking at your own mind. You're looking at Kunshi emanating stars.
Yeah. And yet your mind has been formed.
That's the way it is now. I mean, it's very close to that now. You just don't know about it. But why did I get into all this? You're trying to explain how bad things happen to you, and how good things happen to you, because you did good karma or bad karma. Where did you think the bad god boss came from? Did karma go to Jupiter and create his mom, and then he was born? And what did you think when we used to talk about it all this time, these months? About collecting bad karma, and that creates a bad feeling and a bad sensation. Where did you think he came from?
That you interpret the way he behaves as being bad.
And there's a difference between how you perceive the boss and that you perceive the boss. I mean, in a sense. Okay.
They're talking more radical. Both are tied together.
No, they're saying the boss that you perceive a boss of any kind is produced by the bok chok, rather than that there's a being. Out, an empty being out there, which forms a basis upon which your bok choks in.
But I'll tell you something. Even in the higher school, those parts which you interpret to be an angry boss according to the higher school are also results of your boss. That part we accept. And that's very, very profound. That's very important. Otherwise, how could karma work? That's the name of the course, right? Now you know how karma works. That's how karma works.
I always thought that there was the perception, you know, our inner process of interpretation of our mind, as well as the arising of events upon which we...
I understand. You thought there was some kind of self-existent material out there,
and
then we were interpreting it as
I didn't say self-existent.
I know you didn't, but you got to be very careful because you're floating with self-existence. In the back of your mind, you're floating with self-existence.
It's the idea that there are components floating around.
Right, and there are atoms, they are out there, and I'm here, and because of my karmas, I'm interpreting them in certain formations.
Yeah, right.
You can accept that for now.
It's not
accurate. We'll talk about it. It's coming. Okay, so that's what's happening according to the mind-only school. Now, I want to go on to one more thing. So if on the homework they said, what are you really looking at when you look at the boss, the angry boss? And what is it that you're really aware of when you're aware of your eyes seeing something? What are you looking at? Mind only school. What are you really looking at?
There is no boss. There is no eye. It's your a bhakshak functioning in the kunshi.
You are looking at kunshi itself. Kunshi is emanating as a... Because of the bhakshak's influence, kunshi is emanating as your boss. It's emanating as your own eye. It also happens to be producing your consciousness of it.
See, this whole idea of emanating implies that there's an outside.
Well, emanating means it's that clear stuff called mind is taking on that form for you because of a previous bhakti.
In your mind.
In your mind.
Why did you say not projecting?
Well, he wants it to be projected onto something. Oh. If anything, it's, I don't know, if you think of it as, it's like a horseshoe, right? And the whole, it's all that kunshi stuff. And here's your eye and your mind, and you're just looking over there at your boss, but it's all your mind that you're looking at. It's your own mind that's emanating as your boss, and your own mind is emanating as your own mind. And that's how karma produces its result.
So when they say that it's taken on a form, they don't mean, and there's no physical basis.
No, they don't accept outside physical, and so outside of your mind.
And how does the deed become the seed?
Oh, that's what we're going to talk about right now.
Wait a minute, Michael, one second. You just said the kunshi emanates. But
yeah.
Before that, you said the bhakchak is the one.
Well, the bhakchak triggers the kunshi to emanate a certain way.
And the bhakchak lives in the kunshi.
So
and
the
it's
whole
also
reservoir really starts emanating. I don't understand.
Yeah. The reservoir starts taking on different appearances. As
so it's like a mirror.
Yeah. You can say
with
that.
Little bhakchak.
Yeah. And the little bhakchaks explode, and one of them turns into a little boss's face, and one of them turns into Michael Roach's eye, and one of them turns into Michael Roach's mind seeing the boss. And now, how does that happen? Let me see, make sure I covered everything. Oh, so what are you really looking at when you look at your eye or the outside form?
Kunchi.
You're looking at that foundation consciousness. You're looking at that big horseshoe of silly putty that's clear and takes on whatever form it wants to according to your bhakti. How is the karma planted? How are the mental seeds planted? Where do they stay? And how do they go on in the meantime? That's our next subject. I think somebody asked that. We'll put back that kunshi here, okay? The way a seed is planted, the way a karmic seed is planted, forget that aura, okay? That's lower school stuff, right? This is more subtle. You do a deed. Let's say that you start yelling at somebody. You yell at someone. And as that deed comes to its conclusion, as that deed approaches its end, the energy of that deed, you think of the deed as this, okay? You know, you're yelling. You get tired of yelling, and it starts to fade out. Your bad deed starts to come to a conclusion. At the very next instant, it transfers its energy to the kunshi in the form of a bhakchak forms.
Okay. What are you talking about? You're talking about energy. It loses its energy.
It doesn't make sense in science, right? I mean, what it means is that the awareness of yelling, your awareness of you yelling, which is a kind of consciousness. You know, you see yourself yell. As that awareness starts to conclude, and as you start to close your mouth, that stains the kunshi with a bhakchak. It plants a bhakchak in the kunshi. It plants a mental seed in your storehouse consciousness, in your foundation consciousness. As you finish your deed, the last energy is concluded, and that energy is transferred into the as a bhakchak into the kunshi. Starts in the kunshi.
So it's like an energy that stains the kunshi.
Yeah. A bhakchak is a very difficult idea. It's true. This is the higher school believes it also. Bhakchak is not mental and it's not physical. It's a kind of energy that stays in your mind.
And as we think of energy, like
it's a mental
energetic
seed.
Particle.
Yeah. It's some kind of existing thing which is changing, and it's like a potential that remains in the mind.
So you're talking about a self-existent thing?
No. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about why it's not.
Michael,
with your example about yelling, let's say in the middle of yelling, you realize what you're doing and you feel deep regret and you apologize to the person. Is it stored differently than if you scream your head off and then...
Yeah. Because your awareness of the event is different by the time it's over.
So what's the arbitrary factor that chops it off at this point? I mean, why couldn't it be bad karma from yelling and right after that good karma from being sad about it? Why
I'll
it
tell you.
Where's the guillotine here?
At the point at which that deed would no longer cause you suffering in the future, it's no longer a bad deed. Nice answer?
So what you're saying is the three various...
At the point where it changes its nature and is no longer going to cause you suffering in the future, it's no longer a bad deed.
That's the same thing. That's a circle.
It is a circle, and I want it to be that way. But that's what I want bad deeds to do for you. It's not guilt. It's not what anybody says. It's not anything else. It's whatever will cause you suffering in the future.
This is true for good deeds, too, right?
Absolutely.
So the bhakchaks are created by the three types of deeds, neutral, bad, or good.
Yeah.
And as long as there's a steady... a contiguous block of bad, it's building a bhakchak, and the moment it switches from being bad to a neutral, the chop off goes, and that becomes...
We're going to talk about it.
And then the next input is going to be neutral until it changes to being good or bad, then it chops off like that.
We'll talk about it.
And it's constantly...
We're going to get to that in this course. It's called black and white karma and mixed black and white karma. Okay? All Buddhist schools believe that. There's no Buddhist school that says that's not true. Where does the karma stay? How does it stay? The mind-only school says, right after the deed reaches its conclusion, that energy is planted in where?
Mind.
Pushing.
Okay, so if anybody ever asked you, where does the mind-only school say that those mental seeds stay until they produce their result, until they start to look like the results? Well, that's in the kushi. And that's why they say kunshi has to exist.
When they start to look like their results, that they undergo a transformation that takes place before...
No, they don't start to. No, they don't say anything like that. Now, the last question about this, then we'll take a break. Very good. Yeah, pretty good. There's a big question of what you just said. How does this little circle, how does this little bhakchak, how does this little mental seed, how does it stay around so long? Is it permanent? No. It continues by, it also goes on moment by moment, right? Like all impermanent things, like all changing things according to Buddhism, it's a stream. It's actually a stream of little replications on itself. So if somebody says to you, oh, well, are bhakchaks permanent? Because, my God, they stay a million years before they give their result. You say, no, they're not permanent. Well, do they change by the instant, like all other changing things? Yes, they go through a constant fluctuation. But they are a chain of similar forms. So it's just replicating. That's, by the way, what John Stilwell is throughout his life. I mean, he is being destroyed by the instant. He is just a series of, you know, when you have enough... When the film goes fast enough, all those separate pictures start to look like a flow, and it's the same thing.
Michael, what determines the nature of the changes?
We already talked about that. How powerful your motivation was. What was the kind of object you did the deed towards? You know, things like that.
But that's only that particular bhakta can only be affected by the original deed that...
In Mahayana, a good confession can affect it.
Does this have anything to do with with when you say if you kill a fly, then your ribs will be crushed at some point? Does this have to do with that?
Well, the time lag is from here to... By the way, this is where you yelled at somebody else, right? And it stays there. And then it produces its result as somebody what?
Yelling at you.
Okay. Is it a person yelling at you? No. How could mind create a person? Mind creates a mind. The awareness of yourself yelling creates an awareness of yourself being yelled at. I love it. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Michael,
Therefore, the content is similar. Nasty content going in, nasty content coming out.
But not only that, it grows, though. It's not something
it's
that...
Yeah, it's a lot of little guys yelling at you.
But you said it gets more
she's been very patient. Go ahead.
So, if bakchaks exist as a stream of individual discrete elements, by the way...
No, it's little bakchak giving rise to another bakchak giving rise to another bakchak. This is an explanation of why a bakchak is not a permanent, unchanging thing, which we all know can't create anything.
Is it an absolute continuum, or is it 1/64th of a second repeating?
It's being destroyed. Kechik makechim kechik chebechu. Mutapetini. Definition of impermanence is that object which is growing and is being destroyed by the instant.
Is it touching? So, for example, is a Buddha is a mind.
You're getting in. If you follow this reasoning, you'll reach emptiness. You can't put your mind on it. Are they touching? I don't know.
Is a Buddha?
Are they not touching? No.
Is a Buddha continuous, or is a Buddha a series of discrete?
A series of. Like, think of it as a film. Think of it as the frames in a film.
Okay, is a mind
and to you, they're happening so fast that to you it looks like it's one
is
film.
Is a mind stream also a series?
Absolutely, yeah. It's called the Santani.
The entire empty universe is a series of discrete events.
All impermanent things.
But so the Buddha is...
Buddha is impermanent. Actually, long story. Okay.
Michael.
By the way, I don't like the word. You know I don't like the word permanent and impermanent. Changing or unchanging. His physical form is changing. His emptiness is unchanging. His Dharmakaya is unchanging. That's it.
How does it replicate itself?
By the force with which this energy was transferred at this point.
But that seems to imply that the energy itself has some
kind of innate identity?
No, but some sort of... I don't know.
Yeah, all objects have the ability to... There's a whole school of thought about second chapter of Abhidhamma Kosha. There's something about you which... keeps your robinness going until you die. There's a similarity between you now and you in 5 minutes from now that we call a stream. Now, what causes that is the power of the bhakti.
Just the
power. And one day it will wear out, and you'll stop looking like Robin, and we'll say Robin died, and Robin's not here anymore.
But power energy sounds to me like it's without qualities, but
no, not
bhakti has some qualities.
Absolutely. Oh,
so
yeah, because it's going to create a yelling guy.
So those qualities are...
Yeah, what quality? The quality of being non-virtuous. Or virtuous.
And they're part of what caused this replica. They're part of the mechanism that caused it.
Oh, they trigger when they flower, you think you see a guy yelling. You think you see an outside guy yelling. You see your own mind looking like an outside guy yelling. Now, does it matter?
Oh.
No, it's still unpleasant. It still stinks. But the point is, if you understand how it works, you can stop it. Is it invalid? Is it less than what you thought it was? Does it not hurt anymore if you know it's your own mind playing tricks on you? It still hurts. It's still bad. It might as well be real. It looks real. It acts real. Does everything else it's supposed to do. It's unpleasant. It still hurts you. Still can kill you. Still can shoot a gun at you. Still you will fall down. It doesn't make it all invalid. It makes it more valid because it explains why it's happening and how you can change it. That's great. It doesn't mean it's not valid. You know, as I often say, go to the dentist, have him drill your teeth, and meditate on how it's your kunshi just showing you as a cavity being drilled on, and it doesn't help, it still hurts, you know. It's reality.
If you yell at someone, and then you have this energy that plants the bakchak in the kunshi, and it continues as a series of discrete events up until the time it ripens, why don't you perceive it when it ripens as yourself yelling at someone again? Why is it turned around at you?
This I haven't quite clarified in my own mind yet. I don't know.
I mean, it seems to me if you...
I know what you mean. You know? If it were totally compatible result and cause, then it should be just yourself yelling. There's something about it that it's the very nature of karma. It creates an unpleasant... definition of virtue. Definition of non-virtue. Creates an unpleasant result. There's something about it that reverses, I agree. Yeah.
The second question is given that you have this energy that plants the bakchak, which continues until it ripens, it seems as the energy dissipates, you know, it becomes less and less and less, and yet karma grows and expands. Why is karma expand since the bakchak is lessening or continuing the same or whatever?
I don't know. We know it's a principle that it does grow, right?
Why
does a tree continue to grow after Well, you know, why does a tree get so much bigger than the acorn? I don't know. Well, the acorn itself, until it produces the tree, doesn't get bigger, right?
With the case of the acorn, you have the nutrients going in the water and the minerals, so you have other factors coming into play.
Yeah.
But aren't you?
I think you're feeding it with ignorance, actually. Mm-hmm. And that's another story, and maybe that's the answer. And I don't want to get into it because we're going to run way over, but they say there's another consciousness called messed up consciousness. Okay, it's called yin-yin. Klesha consciousness. Looks at its ignorance, and it looks at Kunshi and misinterprets everything about Kunshi, and that's probably what makes the karma grow bigger, is the ignorance about it and the bad attitude about it. Yeah, I don't want to go into it. There's another consciousness, it's called Klesha consciousness, bad thought consciousness, that looks at Kunshi, misinterprets it, and probably makes the karma worse. Okay, one more thing. What does the Madhyamika Prasangika, the Semtsampas, the mind-only school, Chandakirti criticizes them, Tsongkhapa criticizes them, the Gajina criticizes them. And they say, well, what do you want? Where do you think the karma stays? If there's no big pool of my mind for it to stay in, well, Mr. Chandakirti, where does it stay?
It is your mind.
Chandakirti says the stream of your mind. Stream of your regular consciousness. The same old consciousness. Your basic consciousness. Stream. Wait, let me do a little bit more, because this is going to be confusing. Okay. And Tsongkhapa says, and the great scholars of the time said, what he means by stream of mind here is John Stillwell. He doesn't refer to stream of mind per se. He refers to John Stillwell, the flow of John Stillwell, the flow of Robin Bentana. That's where the karma stays.
What's
not even in their mind.
You mean the flow of you experiencing yourself at the moment is John Stillwell.
It's Madhyamika Prasangika.
Yeah.
The simple, unexamined me. They call it the simple me. Tom Kiley, don't get into his emptiness, don't get into blah, 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 don't look too deep. You know, the John Stillwell, remember we said simple well self-awareness in the last class?
Right.
Buddha's habit. You know, Buddha says, I'm Buddha. I'm Shakyamuni. He took seven steps or whatever, eight steps, and he says, I'm the greatest being in the world. Cassius Clay, whatever. He said that when he was born. Okay? He came out of the mother's womb and said, I'm the greatest. You know, he has an awareness of himself. That simple awareness of me, I, Michael, that's where the karma stays.
Well, then when you died, it would all go away.
That simple I. No, Tom Kiley goes on. What are you talking about? Tom Kiley before.
No. Tom Kiley doesn't go on because the previous life I'm going to be.
You're going to be some
Jane Kiley or something like that. All right. So if what you say is true, when Tom Kiley disappears, all that karma will disappear.
You're right. Technically, I should say the simple me. Me won't disappear.
The me which is currently experiencing myself as Tom Kiley.
Yeah. Me. Me. It's planted in me. Just me. And they say, just me, not some. If you want to see the word, it's not some. Not some. Where does the karma stay? If you, Madhyamika, you big Buddhist scholars, you know, you don't accept our idea of this kunshi, well, where does the karma stay? Well, just in you. In you. And that you, according to the highest school of Buddhism, is you looking at your mind and your other parts and saying, me. Interpreting it as me.
You just said
that's where the karma is.
You said a stream of mind. You didn't say me before. It's the same interchange.
And then I said what stream of mind means here.
It's me. Okay.
Is you thinking me about your stream of mind.
You just
so
said
either way, it's fine.
You can say either way. If you're one of those people in the class like Ariel who wants to fly high, technically, it's not your stream of mind. It's you. A label put on your stream of mind and your arms and your legs and everything. If you put stream of mind on the homework, I don't mind. If you put simple me, I like it better. You won't know what that means for a long time. But think of let it cool. Okay, that's very deep. That's where the karma stays. It's a lot more comfortable to think that it stays in some big pool that you carry along with you. And that's why the Buddha taught kunshi, right? One of the four schools, Buddha taught it, it's valid, it works, it has a use, It's a good way of thinking about it. It can help you.
Are you saying then that the idea of the me is more accurate than the kuchi?
It is more accurate.
And so the bakshaks, which are carried in your regular mind stream?
There is no mind stream.
Yeah, are you?
Just a chakra.
So are you saying, would another way to be say it then, is that all of the thoughts...
About it, it can help you.
Are you saying then that the idea of the me is more accurate than the kuchi?
It is more accurate.
And so the bakshaks, which are carried in your regular mind stream?
There is no mind stream.
Yeah, are you?
Just a chakra.
So are you saying... Would another way to be say it then is that all of the thoughts you've had, all of the actions you've done, all of the deeds, you know, everything has led you to who you are at this discrete moment in time, and therefore the result of you is the sum of your karma?
We're going to talk about it. I know that you're going to have trouble with this idea, so I stuck in the reading and I'm going to go over what does this big, big, high school say is just you. What do they mean when they say just me? And we're going to do that after the break. This is going to be a rough class. Hang on to your seats. But it's very important. I think if you're a thinking person, you can't accept karma unless you get some kind of discussion like this. Where does it stay? How does it stick on me? You know, in the lowest schools, the Abhidharma says, oh, there's this invisible saddle cinch. They love these things, right? They got this Namarik Che Mayimbe Suk, right? They got this aura, right? So they say, oh, well, there's this big thing. It looks like a saddle cinch. And it's called a topa. And all your karmas get stuck in there, and you carry them along with you, you know? They don't say there's a physical belt-like thing, but they say there's an energy called a belt that keeps those things on you. And, you know, that's how they explain it. Okay, so take a break and come back in about 10 minutes.
Am I in your way?
There's a famous verse that's in your reading. If you do the memorization, you're supposed to memorize it. It's from a sutra called the Sutra Requested by Upali. And it basically says that heaven is made by your mind. Okay. And then Shantideva has a quotation that says hell is made by your mind. You know, don't think, Shantideva has a very famous quotation that says in the Bodhicharitara, don't think that hell was made by, what do you think, some Acme construction company went down under the ground and made hell, you know? Who made hell? You know, you make hell. You make it with your own mind. Does that mean that if you're in a bad mood, this world looks like hell? No. It means that there really is a place where beings are in millions of years of torment, and that's hell, but you create it through your karma. And when you get there, it exists through your perceptions. And that's very, very famous. So I'm going to tell you how in scripture, those quotations are all over the place. So the mind-only school says, by the way, in those quotations, the Buddha often says, the world is only your mind. You know, the universe is only your mind. The universe and all the beings in it are only mind. So the mind-only school says, come on, the Buddha said it. Buddha said it's only mind. We're going to name our school after that. We're the mind-only school. And we're the only ones who follow what the Buddha said. Because the Buddha said it's all mind-only. If you ever get to paradise or tantric paradise, it's mind-only. If you ever have to go to hell, it's mind-only. So the mind-only school says, we're the right school. Buddha said mind-only. So what does mind-only really mean?
Okay.
If you never learn anything else, learn Tolpitaksa. I said about everything, right?
Yeah.
Tolpe means by your conceptions, through your own conceptions.
Conceptions?
Conceptions. Taksa means just labeled through your own conceptions. There's another spelling of this verb in the Sanskrit root, also means just made up by your own conception.
And so how do you say it? Chittam?
This is the highest school's viewpoint of reality. This is Madhyamika Prasanna. This is what the Madhyamika says. The world is just what you label it. The world is just what you label it. It sounds close to what? Mind only, but it's a little different, isn't it? They don't say you're looking at your mind acting like your boss. They say you label your boss the angry boss. And I think it's very, very healthy, very good for you guys to know the difference between these two schools. Because people are always mixing them up. The average American Buddhist idea of all this stuff is just a big jumble. You know, now you know the difference. Okay. Mind-only school says what? Your eye consciousness grows from a karmic seed, and it's looking at foundation consciousness looking like an object. It's basically looking at itself. And then the highest school says, no, there are indications of an angry boss out there. There are parts that look like an angry boss. There's a redness there. There's a sweat glinting off there. There's a decibel level coming into the ear. And then you label it what?
Angry boss.
Angry boss. You label those parts angry boss.
And what are those
parts? I'm waiting for this next question. When is this question going to come?
What are those parts?
What are those parts? Listen very carefully. When you go to the glistening sweat on the brow, or the redness of the face, and you check that, that's also a label put on to the redness on the left side and the redness on the right side. And you go to the redness on the left side.
It's like the pen.
And it's the left part of the left side and the right part of the left side. So where is the red?
In your mind.
Infinite parts.
This way you'll find its emptiness. If you continue to look, where's the real parts that I'm labeling? You know, parts that are really there that I'm not labeling, never find them. That's a meditation on emptiness. That's one method to reach emptiness. You will never find them. What does Prasangika say? Leave it alone. Taupitatsam, leave it alone. There's a redness, there's a glint off the face, there's a decibel level of the voice. Don't look deeper than that. That's his reality. He's real. Okay? And I'm interpreting as angry boss. It hurts me. It functions. It fires me. It gives me bonuses. It's there. You can't deny its existence. It's operating. Okay? And that, leave it. Don't go deeper. You know, if you go deeper, you won't find anything. But if you're interested in doing an emptiness meditation at work, which will probably get you fired, do that. You know, keep looking for the boss. He's not there.
Wouldn't you say?
But on a reality, on a relative level, you know, he's an angry boss, and it does hurt, and he can fire you.
Wouldn't the same proof that we did for the, you know, the parts of the pen apply to this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Same idea.
Yeah, but it's all being labeled onto the emptiness of the boss.
No, it's labels. What is it really? It's, you never see the whole boss. Come on, you know that. You can't see the bottom of his feet. You can't see his back. It could be all empty for you. Know, he could be one of these RoboCops. You don't know.
Ever ready?
Yeah. You really don't know. You take certain indications. You select indications. And you form a mental image of an angry boss. And then you mistake that image for the boss. That's highest teaching of Buddhism. Why do you interpret that redness and that sweating and that voice decibel as an angry boss? What forces you to do that?
Okay.
A bhakcha. Same, we accept it, we believe it. There's a bhakcha. There's one of those nasty little seeds in your mind. It's making you see him that way. Is that now, next time you see your angry boss, what did I have today? I was sick yesterday in class. It was very uncomfortable. So I'm thinking, you know, this is my bhakcha ripening, you know. And I'm seeing Rinpoche, and everything seems, you know, I'm kind of dizzy and feel upset stomach and my head hurts. And this is all indications which I am labeling. Can I get out? I would really like to be out of this right now. I really wanted to be out of it, but it's too late. That is real. Real. That's reality. And it hurts. And that's why you have to, the game is to change the bhakchas. The game is to use up the old bhakchak, get rid of the old bhakchaks, and make the new bhakchaks. Don't react to the old bhakchaks by making new lousy bhakchaks. That's the name of the game. Once you start hurting, it's too late.
Michael, could you say that the fact that your boss got angry at you to begin with is also part of your...
Absolutely. Everything about him. A mole on his cheek. Is
not how you interpret, but whatever interdependent...
Arising
that's going on between you.
Interdependent arising means that the definition in the higher school of interdependent arising is that I see indications of an angry boss and I label them angry boss. And it is an angry boss and it hurts me.
But I'm asking, the fact that he got angry at you is also a result of your karma. I'm not talking about the interpretive process.
If it's unpleasant for me, by definition.
The implicit
not only do we define actions by their results, But we can define the action by, I mean, not only do we define a thing as a good karma or a bad karma by whether it hurts us or not, but if something hurts you, it must have been from a bad karma. But you can go both ways.
So if somebody gets angry at you, it may or may not be your bad karma. It's
it depends on how it makes you feel.
Right, okay.
If they're getting angry at you hurts you, which normally it does, if it's unpleasant for you, it must be a ripening of bad karma. What you do from that moment on is total free will. If you want free will, there's your free will. You have a choice at that moment. You can react the way the whole world reacts, which is with more. But we had it Saturday. We walked out of here, and this big guy came up to Lee Mason and knocked her on her ass. And there was another guy standing there, and he says, "Ain't you gonna do nothing about it?" You know, and then we're like,
"Wow,
no." You know, and he says, "You know, what? That's we just finished the bok chop. Great, you know. If she doesn't get mad, she didn't get mad. It was very admirable. She didn't look mad." But, you know, we used up a bok chop. You know, we should have a bok chop party, you know. One more bok chop gone. One more bok chop gone and no new bok chop planet. No violence committed. You know, very nice. Yeah.
So this aspect of the unfindable parts, the infinitely smaller and smaller parts, which all come together to be perceived and interpreted. What causes the arisal of those and how does that happen?
Ultimately, this is that point where the Buddha says, I can't answer you because you're wanting them to be self-existent when you ask the question.
I'm not asking that they be self-existent.
I know you don't think so. Bok chop. Are they mental? Not according to the school. They are outside physical forms.
They are physical.
According to the highest school. Yes.
So how does karma cause physical arising? How does a bok chop cause a physical
arising?
Well,
when you get down to those physical arisings, they're a perception created, placed upon smaller parts of physical things that I... And ultimately, yeah, it's all an imputation of mine.
Labeling onto the boss or making the boss appear that way is different than making the boss.
I understand. Right? That's true. Well, not really.
Because you, in one case you're saying there's nothing out there but your mind, and in another case you're saying...
There are indications.
There is something. Yeah. There seems to be something out there.
At the same time, someone else doesn't see the boss as the angry boss. So what's seeing what? I mean, you know.
I knew this moment would come in the class, and I want to leave it right there. And I want you to worry about it, and we'll talk about it in the next class. We're going to do the Diamond Sutra, and it's going to be the sub. And it's not out of just. I'm not playing. I'm saying, it's a very. It's the whole crux, and leave it there. You'll see why. Okay. All right. Last thing. So, last question is, and I'm also going to, I'm actually almost going to end on time. So the mind-only school come to these prasangikas and says, well, then what did the Buddha mean when he said everything is mind-only? According to you guys, it's not just mind-only. There are indications out there, and you're labeling them, you're interpreting them in certain ways. Well, if it's not mind only, why did the Buddha say everything was mind only? And the prasangikas give two answers. The first answer is in a negative way, and the second answer is in a positive way. The negative answer is, the Buddha wanted you to know that these are creations of karma, and not of some what?
Real thing.
No.
Creator that, God.
Yeah, there's no God up there saying... gee, I think I'll give so-and-so some cancer today, you know? So in a negative way, the Buddha said, you know, hell is made by your mind, so you wouldn't think it was made by some sadistic guy. Right? In a positive way, what do you guess? He wanted you to know that the mind is the main thing. That mind, as opposed to what? What is it that really causes us? Where did you really come from? We talked about that first moment of you and your mommy's tummy.
Well, me as a self-existent being came from my ignorance.
Yeah, it came from your mind. Your mind, they're talking about the 12 links of dependent origination, right? What's the first link up there? It's your ignorance. It's just, the world is mind only in the sense that it's mainly mind, in the sense that it's mainly coming from your own mind's ignorance of the past. That's what the Buddha meant when he said all this stuff was mind-only. He did not mean that you are looking at your own consciousness and seeing things appearing on that consciousness. And that's how Chandrakirti says to the mind only school. That's what the Buddhist meant when he said mind only. Maybe you want to change the name of your school now or something? Okay. That's all.
Can you go over that last part again?
Yeah. In a negative way, the world is mind only in the sense that it was its creation of your former karma, mainly your sempa, mainly your mind, and not a creation of a god. And that's why we say mind only. And in a positive way, you should understand that mind is the main thing. Mind is the main actor, main cause.
Okay.
I just want to say, you know, I mean, what's the whole practical implementation of all this? It makes it very clear. I mean, once you get this explanation, and you get so you have now a decent argument for how karma is actually planted in your mind, or you, and how it comes back to you, then what do you have to do? You cannot anymore ignore any one of your actions. You have to go down now to a very fine level of observation of yourself, and you have to watch yourself. Now you can't allow any more bhakchaks to be planted, even by negligence, or even by compulsion. You're now educated. You know what's happening now. You've got to now, you know that any time you see yourself doing something bad, it's planting a bhakchak. It absolutely is and must be planting a bhakchak. Once that bhakchak is planted, it's very hard to get it out of the mind state. Extremely difficult. You're going to have to experience it. And now you know how you experience it. The whole principle of how you experience is basically accepted by the Nikkei. So now you've got to be goddamn careful with your bhakchaks. You know, your whole life now you have to be very careful with what you do and say and what you think. Because every time you do something, every time you think something, it's planted. And it stains your mind. And you can't, to get it out is almost impossible. You know, to purify that is almost impossible. So now it gives you even more reason to follow those 10. You must follow those 10.
How is it almost impossible?
I mean, a very, very good Mahayana confession purification can do it. But don't forget that involves domsem. Domsem means restraining yourself almost ever again. I mean, it's almost a successful purification doesn't mean having a nice ceremony and finishing it and then your mind is pure. Those bhakchaks are stopped. It depends a lot on the process of not doing it anymore. And most of us who have learned purification ceremony think that the next day we can go back to throwing more bhakchaks in there, because why worry, you know? The day after you can clean them all out. It's not like that. If you're still doing what you did 10 years ago, which I am, then all those purification ceremonies, it's not complete. There's something not there. It's lacking. It's not going to work. You have to be very careful.
That mind-only presentation sounds like, and you mentioned it at the end of the class here, it sounds like the last class, where it makes you the creator God of everything. And if you're the being that's creating everyone else out there through these bhakchaks and the...
Kunshi,
right?
Yeah.
Then why do you need to create all these other beings? Why do you need to have a sequence? Why do you need to create a time frame within which all these things are appearing? Why not just get it over with and do it at once?
When Rinpoche was asked that question in the abandoned bank in Brooklyn, and you were there maybe?
No, 1976, 1975.
I said, what do you want? All these Buddhas are going to retire?
Well, there aren't any all these Buddhas. I just am fooling myself into thinking that there are by the Kunshi.
Yeah. Anyway, that's one of the most important classes you ever had. And now you have to buy karma if you have a good argument for it.
Michael, can I ask you a question about the way that karma is carried in the Dhammic Prasangika?
Yeah.
You know, you were saying that they say it's just carried in me, right? Would an accurate way to think of that be to say that all of your past karmic needs have formed you, your mind, to be how it is now, therefore your the present moment, the state of your mind in the present moment is the
result and outcome of all your past karma, and the way and its predisposition to behave in a certain way is the sum of all your past karma. Therefore,
you could say that, but you're also aware of
which it? Which it?
It. Yeah, I forget.
Say that again. Your mind is. Yeah.
That also.
Right.
Yeah.
This is the end of Class 5.